This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Magic Treehouse Super Edition, Book Number 1, World at War, 1944. Previously published as Danger in the Darkest Hour. This is Mary Pope Osborne. Prologue. One summer day in Frog Creek, Pennsylvania, a mysterious treehouse appeared in the woods. It was filled with books. A boy named Jack and his sister Annie found the treehouse and soon discovered that it was magic. They could go to any time and place in history just by pointing to a picture in one of the books. While they were gone, no time at all passed back in Frog Creek. Jack and Annie eventually found out that the treehouse belonged to Morgan Le Fay, a magical librarian from the legendary realm of Camelot. They have since traveled on many adventures in the Magic Treehouse and completed many missions for both Morgan Le Fay and her friend Merlin the Magician. Teddy and Kathleen, two young enchanters from Camelot, have sometimes helped Jack and Annie in both big and small ways. Now Jack and Annie are about to receive an unexpected call for help. Chapter 1. Commando.
Jack!
Annie shouted from the front yard. Jack looked up from his book. Tired from a soccer game, he was lying on his bed, reading about volcanoes on Mars. Late afternoon shadows stretched across his room.
Jack! Jack!
Jack stood up and crossed to the window. Annie was standing by her bike. A towel was draped around her neck. Her hair was wet from swimming in the lake. She was looking up at the sky, as if she was searching for something.
What do you want? Jack called through the screen.
Come down, she called. Help me look.
Look for what? Said Jack.
Just come, you won't believe it, said Annie.
Jack sighed. He marked his place in his book and went downstairs to the front porch.
This better be good, he said. I was in the middle of a book.
Annie was still looking up at the sky.
Where did he go? She said.
Where did who go? Said Jack.
Annie didn't answer. She walked to the edge of the yard and kept looking.
Oh, darn, I don't see him.
See who? Said Jack.
What are you talking about? The pigeon, said Annie.
Jack stared at Annie for a moment.
Seriously? He said. You're looking for a pigeon?
Yes.
You called me away from my book to see a pigeon? Said Jack.
Yes, help me find him, Annie said.
Jack rolled his eyes and stepped into the yard. He looked up at the hazy sky.
He was following me. He swooped down near my head, said Annie, still looking in every direction. I don't see him now. Where could he have gone?
What's the big deal? Said Jack. We see pigeons every day.
Not like this one, said Annie.
When I was getting on my bike at the lake, I heard a loud cooing. I looked up. He was sitting on a branch, and he looked straight into my eyes. He was super intelligent, I could tell.
Are you sure you weren't out in the sun too long? Asked Jack.
I'm serious, said Annie. He had these intense, staring eyes. I talked to him, like I said hi, and then he took off. I thought, okay, so much for that. But then I started riding home, and he flew in front of me, right across my path.
How do you know it was the same pigeon? Asked Jack.
I just know. He circled above me all the way home, said Annie. He even swooped down a couple more times. But I don't see him now. I don't see him at all.
Her voice trailed off as she looked up at the sky and around the yard.
Well, that's enough pigeon hunting for me, said Jack. I'm heading back to my book.
Ah, I see him. I see him, Annie whispered.
Jack stopped. Where?
There,
Annie pointed to a plump pigeon perched on a bird feeder that was hanging from a maple tree. She stepped toward him. The pigeon didn't move. She stepped closer and closer. The bird still didn't move.
"Oh, wow, Jack. You won't believe this. I didn't see it until now."
"What? See what?" said Jack.
"Oh, wow. Oh, wow," Annie whispered.
Jack walked slowly toward Annie. When he reached her side, he stopped and stared at the bird, too. It was an ordinary-looking pigeon, smoky gray, with black stripes on his wings and iridescent green neck feathers. His amber-colored eyes stared at Jack.
"Look at his leg," Annie whispered.
Attached to one of the pigeon's spindly legs was a tiny red canister.
"Whoa," whispered Jack. "I think he's a carrier pigeon."
"A carrier pigeon?" said Annie. "Yeah, they carried messages to people a long time ago," said Jack. "There used to be lots of them, but not anymore."
"Why not?" Annie asked.
"They're not needed anymore," said Jack. "Not with technology like the internet and cell phones." The pigeon made a low cooing sound.
"Why did he follow you?" said Jack.
"And where'd he come from?" Annie took a deep breath.
"I know where he came from. I just figured it out," she said.
"Where?"
"Another time," said Annie.
"A time before the internet and cell phones." Jack's heart skipped a beat.
"You think?"
"I know," said Annie. "And the message is for us." She moved a step closer toward the pigeon, but the bird flapped his wings and took off from the feeder. Then he soared out of their yard and up the street, disappearing into the trees of the Frog Creek woods.
"Let's go," cried Annie.
"Wait, I'll get my pack." Jack bolted into the house, grabbed his backpack from the hallway, and hurried outside. Jack and Annie raced up the sidewalk. They crossed the street and ran into the woods. As they weaved in and out of dark green shadows, the late summer air smelled of sun-dried wood and fallen pine needles. Birds called lazily from the treetops. Finally, they stopped at the base of the tallest oak.
"Of course," said Annie.
She grabbed the rope ladder that dangled from the treetop and started up. Jack followed, and they both scrambled inside the magic treehouse. Golden sunlight lit the stacks of books and the shimmering M in the floor.
"Of course," said Jack.
A soft cooing sound came from the window. The carrier pigeon was pacing on the windowsill.
"Of course, a million times," said Annie, laughing. "Don't fly away. I won't hurt you, I promise."
The pigeon stopped pacing and stared at her with his amber eyes.
"I can take that message from you now," Annie whispered, "if you don't mind."
"He doesn't mind," said Jack. "He's a professional."
"Right," said Annie.
The pigeon was very still as Annie reached out and gently opened the lid of the red canister attached to his leg. She pulled out a tiny scroll. Then she snapped the lid shut and unrolled the piece of paper. Annie and Jack looked at the writing together. It wasn't elegant, like Merlin's or Morgan Le Fay's writing. It was the scrawl of a kid's handwriting. Jack looked at the signature.
"It's from Teddy," he said.
"Uh-oh," said Annie.
"What happened? Did he goof up again?"
"I'll bet he did," said Jack. They both laughed. The apprentice sorcerer from Camelot often made them laugh. Sometimes he made big mistakes when he tried to do magic. Many of the mistakes were funny, but a few had been terrible. Annie read the letter aloud.
"Dear Jack and Annie, I sent Commando to find you."
"Commando?" Jack interrupted. "That's a funny name for a Camelot pigeon."
"Yeah, it sounds like a tough army guy," Annie said.
She kept reading.
"Kathleen and I are working with the forces of good in one of the darkest hours of history, and we need your help. Please come to Glastonbury, England,
right now. Your friend, Teddy.
I can't wait to see Teddy and Kathleen, said Annie.
Yeah, said Jack.
He was especially excited to see Kathleen, a brilliant and beautiful young enchantress from Camelot.
But what does Teddy mean, one of the darkest hours of history?
Annie shrugged. The pigeon made a low cooing sound.
Commando wants us to hurry, said Annie.
Okay, let's go, Jack said. He took another deep breath and pointed to the words, Glastonbury, England, on the tiny piece of paper.
I wish we could go there.
The wind started to blow. The treehouse started to spin. It spun faster and faster. Then everything was still, absolutely still. Chapter 2. Top Secret. Commando cooed as if saying goodbye. Then he flapped his wings and flew out of the treehouse. He disappeared into the misty gray twilight.
Thanks, Commando,
Annie called after him.
Well, I guess we're here, said Jack, shivering in the chilly air.
But our clothes didn't change. I wonder why. The treehouse had landed in the branches of a tall maple tree. Through the haze, Jack and Annie could see ducks floating on a pond and sheep grazing in a meadow bordered by hedgerows. Beyond the hedges were broken-down buildings, stone pillars, and crumbling archways. There was no sign of people.
It looks ancient, said Annie. Is Glastonbury part of Camelot?
I don't know, said Jack.
This looks sort of like Camelot, said Annie.
Yeah, the ruins of Camelot, said Jack.
Teddy! Kathleen! Annie called.
There was no answer. Let's go look for them, said Jack. Jack grabbed his backpack. He and Annie climbed down the rope ladder. They stepped onto the wet grass and started across the meadow. Rounding a hedge, they came upon the remains of what had once been a huge church. The roofless building had tall ivy-covered walls and grand arches made of stone blocks.
Cheerio, friends!
A teenage boy strode through one of the arches. The boy wore an old-fashioned flight suit, gloves, and a tight-fitting leather helmet. He carried a khaki duffel bag.
Teddy! Cried Annie.
She and Jack hurried to the young enchanter of Camelot. Teddy put down his bag and they all hugged.
I am glad Commando found you, said Teddy.
He is quite a smashing soldier, you know.
Who, the pigeon? Said Annie.
Yes, Commando is a member of the National Pigeon Service, said Teddy. Jack and Annie giggled. You're kidding, right? Said Jack.
Not at all, said Teddy.
Pigeon breeders have given over 200,000 pigeons to the British military to carry messages throughout Europe. Commando has been on dozens of missions. The missions were all in this time, of course. He needed the treehouse to take him to your time.
So what is this time? Asked Jack.
It is June 4th, 1944, said Teddy. And you have landed in Glastonbury, England. It is the site of one of the great monasteries of Europe. You can still see an ancient tower on the sacred hill of Glastonbury Tor. He pointed to a conical hill overlooking the flat countryside. Eventually, all the sacred buildings fell into ruin, but legends of King Arthur still surround this area. For that reason, I thought it might be a good place to meet you. A living midpoint between our worlds.
Where's Kathleen? Asked Annie, looking around. We thought she would be with you.
Well, that is why I called for you, said Teddy. But first, how much do you know about World War II?
Jack gasped. Did we come to the time of World War II?
I'm afraid you have. The war has been going on for almost 5 years, said Teddy.
Oh, man, said Jack.
So you know about World War II, said Teddy.
Some, said Jack. I know that America fought Germany and Italy and Japan, and a man named Adolf Hitler was the leader of Germany
and his political party was called the Nazis.
And we also know that three of our great-grandfathers fought in World War II, said Annie.
The people of England are grateful for all the help the Americans are giving them fighting this war, said Teddy. At this point, Nazis have taken over most of Europe. They have killed countless innocent civilians, including millions of Jewish people.
Well, that's terrible, said Annie.
Really terrible, said Jack.
But what does this war have to do with you and Kathleen?
When Merlin looked into the future, he saw this frightful time, said Teddy. He saw how important it was to bring hope to British leaders. So he sent Kathleen and me to London.
The leaders actually met with you? Asked Jack.
Teddy smiled. Indeed they did, he said. Kathleen used a bit of magic to make us both appear older than we are. We were quite brilliant, wearing the right disguises and using the right manners and speech. We seemed to have inspired everyone, including the Prime Minister, Winston Churchill.
Really? Said Jack.
Oh, yes, said Teddy. In fact, Winston inducted Kathleen and me into the SOE.
What's that? Asked Annie.
SOE stands for Special Operations Executive, said Teddy. It is a top-secret organization that Winston formed. It conducts undercover missions in countries occupied by the Nazis. In the short time since Kathleen and I completed the required training, we have both been sent on many secret assignments.
Is Kathleen away on an assignment now? Asked Annie.
Yes. Kathleen left for a mission in France more than 3 weeks ago. And now... Teddy stopped.
And now what? Asked Jack.
Now it seems she has disappeared, said Teddy.
Oh, no. What happened to her? Asked Annie.
I do not know, said Teddy.
What was her mission? Asked Jack.
I do not know that either. She could not tell me, said Teddy. Secret agents must keep their mission secret even from each other. All I know is that 2 weeks ago, I was asked to fly behind enemy lines to a location in Normandy, France, to pick her up.
Fly behind enemy lines? Said Jack.
Yes, I have done that many times, said Teddy. But when I arrived at the meeting place, she was not waiting for me. I was frantic, and then yesterday I received a message from her, delivered by a French carrier pigeon.
So she's okay? Asked Annie.
Well, at least I know she is alive, said Teddy. The problem is, she wrote her message in a code, in case it fell into enemy hands. But I have had no success trying to make sense of certain parts of it. He pulled a small piece of paper from his pocket and read Kathleen's message aloud. Come to me in the darkest time, a wand I need, and a magic rhyme. 3 miles east of Sir Kay's grave, cross a river to find a cave. Look for knights in small round cows, a crack in a rock beneath the boughs. Teddy sighed. You see why I cannot share this with anyone in the SOE, he said. Even if they could decipher the code, others would not understand her request for the wand and magic rhyme.
But why does she need them? Asked Jack. Her magic is amazing. Remember when she turned us all into seals?
Yes, but these are very, very dark times, said Teddy. I am not surprised that she may need extra magic. I have found my own powers very limited. That is why I sent for you.
So, do you have something we can take to Kathleen? Asked Jack.
Oh, yes, said Teddy. I have the wand of Dianthus and the rhyme to unlock its magic.
Great, said Annie.
The next 2 lines of her message I do understand, said Teddy. He read on. 3 miles east of Sir Kay's grave, cross a river to find a cave. The secret burial places of Arthur's knights are revealed in one of Merlin's books, said Teddy. Kathleen knew I would know, that the burial place for Sir Kay is Caen, a town in Normandy, France.
Wait, I'd better write this down, said Jack.
He pulled his notebook and pencil out of his backpack.
Spell that, please.
C-A-E-N, said Teddy. Jack wrote the town's name in his notebook.
So we go to Caen, said Annie. We travel 3 miles east, cross a river, and look for a cave.
Yes, said Teddy. But I cannot imagine what the next 2 lines could mean. He read from the note. Look for knights and small round cows, a crack in a rock beneath the boughs. Teddy looked up. Do you understand this?
Not really, said Jack. There weren't any knights fighting in World War II.
Indeed not, said Teddy. And small round cows? A crack in a rock? Boughs? What does all that mean? He folded the note and handed it to Annie. Well, I trust you to figure this out. I know you are expert decoders.
You're kidding, said Jack. Us?
Of course, said Teddy. When Kathleen and I went with you to New York City, you figured out the secret poem to free the unicorn from the museum tapestry, remember? And Morgan's missions for you were often written as riddles.
Yes, but, started Jack.
We have to find Kathleen, said Teddy. I cannot lose her. So many people have been lost in this war. It really is the darkest time. Truly, a terrible time.
It's okay, Teddy, Annie said. We'll help you.
Of course we will, said Jack. We'll do our best. Teddy took a deep breath and smiled.
Thank you, my friends, he said. I am most grateful, and sorry that I cannot be with you in France.
You're not coming with us? Jack asked.
No, tonight the SOE is sending me on an urgent mission to rescue downed airmen in Holland and Belgium, said Teddy. I must do so before daylight.
Wow, said Annie.
It is the sort of thing the SOE does every day, said Teddy. Then he clapped his hands together. All right, let us roll up our sleeves and get moving. It is time you put on your parachutes.
Parachutes? Said Jack.
Yes, said Teddy. You cannot jump from a plane without parachutes. He picked up his duffel bag and strode off.
Wait, did he say we're going to jump from a plane?
Jack asked Annie.
He did, said Annie. But don't worry, he said he'd give us some magic.
She hurried after Teddy.
I know, but, began Jack.
Come along, Jack, Teddy called to him. The moon is rising over Glastonbury Tor. Chapter 3 Spy Taxi. A full moon glowed over Glastonbury Tor as Jack and Annie followed Teddy between the hedges. Moon shadows stretched along the ground. Teddy rounded a tall bush at the edge of the abbey grounds. There she is, he said. He pointed to a small plane sitting in an open field.
Oh, man, said Jack. Is that real?
He thought the tiny plane looked like a cartoon. A single propeller was attached to its rounded nose, and it had big, clunky tires.
Yes, we call it a spy taxi, said Teddy.
It was made especially for secret operations. It can fly low under enemy radar and land in tight places.
How many people does it carry? Asked Jack.
It is designed to carry only a pilot and one passenger, said Teddy. But it also has room for supply canisters, which I am not carrying, so one of you can take that space.
But what about when we add Kathleen? Said Annie.
Do not worry, said Teddy. I think we can all squeeze together, and if that does not work, perhaps with the magic you bring her, Kathleen can make everyone fit.
Good, said Jack. He was eager to get the wand of Dianthus from Teddy.
And another question, where will you pick us up?
In the same place I drop you off, said Teddy. I have been to that drop zone before. It is a lonely field, and to the best of our knowledge, not under enemy observation. You will have to get back there from wherever you find Kathleen.
Got it, said Annie.
But an equally important question is when I will pick you up, said Teddy. And that is a question you will have to answer.
How do we answer it? Asked Annie.
When you know that it is time to leave, you must send me a secret message, said Teddy.
By pigeon? Asked Annie.
No, a carrier pigeon might be difficult for you to find. It would be easier to send a message over a wireless radio, said Teddy.
What should our message say? Asked Annie.
In your message, say, Teddy thought for a moment and then smiled. Say, the unicorn is free. And
wait, said Jack.
He wrote in his notebook, the unicorn is free. And then add the date and time, said Teddy. Send that message over a wireless radio, and I will pick you up at that time in the field where I drop you tonight.
How do we find a wireless radio? Asked Jack.
As you go about your mission, be on the lookout for members of the French Resistance, said Teddy. Any one of them will help you find a wireless.
What's the French Resistance? Asked Annie.
Throughout France, there are French citizens who are secretly fighting back against the Nazis who have occupied their country, Teddy explained. They are called resistance fighters. They live very dangerous lives. If a member of the resistance is caught by the Nazis, he or she will be imprisoned or killed.
That's terrible, said Annie.
So how do we find someone in the French resistance?
There are many ways, said Teddy. The simplest way, though, is to make the V is for victory sign. He held up two fingers in the shape of a V. It is a secret way for one resistance fighter to recognize another. You can make the sign with your fingers, draw it on a piece of paper, scratch it into the dirt, or signal any way you can. Jack and Annie both held fingers up in a V is for victory sign.
Good,
but be very careful, said Teddy. If you give the sign to the wrong person, you could end up in the hands of the enemy. Teddy reached into his large duffel bag and took out some clothes. These are your disguises, he said. He handed Jack and Annie each a pair of corduroy overalls and a long-sleeved shirt. They pulled them on over their shorts and t-shirts. And these, said Teddy. He handed them each a pair of boots. They took off their sneakers and pulled on their boots. And a field pack instead of your backpack, said Teddy. He gave Jack an old-fashioned looking pack with buckles. You will have to wear it on your chest. Your parachute will be on your back. Jack moved his notebook, pen, and pencil from his backpack into the field pack. He left his backpack beside his sneakers. And now your flying gear, said Teddy. He took out two leather helmets and two pairs of goggles. Jack and Annie each pulled on a tight-fitting leather helmet. Then Jack positioned his goggles over his glasses. And a torchlight, said Teddy. He handed a large, heavy flashlight to Jack. Jack put the flashlight into the field pack. And now, Teddy climbed up a short stepladder to the door of the plane and pulled out two bulky contraptions. They looked like long canvas backpacks, attached to a complicated web of straps and buckles. Your parachute harnesses, he said, descending the stepladder. Come on, I will strap you in. One at a time, Teddy buckled Jack and Annie into their parachutes. Then he attached the field pack to the front of Jack's harness.
So how does all this work? Said Jack.
He was fighting to stay calm. Teddy pointed to a large metal ring on the strap across Jack's chest. This is your ripcord handle. When you pull it, it will release your parachute.
Okay, but when do we pull it? Asked Jack.
After you step off the plane, you will plunge through the open air, said Teddy. Count to five,
then pull hard on the handle. Easy.
Easy?
Jack felt a little sick already. Remember, jump quickly, one after the other, Teddy said. If you do not, you will land too far apart and lose each other completely.
Got it, said Annie.
And finally, said Teddy. He handed them each a printed card with a small photograph. Identity cards. You now have French names, Jean and Aimé.
Where did you get our photos?
Asked Jack. A tap of the wand helped with that, said Teddy.
Cool, said Jack.
He was relieved when he remembered they would have the wand of Dianthus. He thought their mission would be impossible without magic. Climb aboard, said Teddy. He scrambled up the step ladder. Annie bounded after him. Jack didn't know how she did it. The parachute equipment felt very heavy and clumsy to him. He climbed awkwardly into the plane after Teddy and Annie. Teddy was already sitting in the pilot's seat in front of a control panel. Position yourselves behind me, he said. Jack and Annie crouched in the narrow space behind the pilot's seat, squashed by their parachute gear. Remember, when you jump, face the earth, said Teddy. Arch your back, spread your arms out, and count to five. Then pull the ripcord handle. As you float down, keep your elbows close in. Then roll onto your left side.
Wait, wait, said Jack. Can you go over all that again?
Easy, said Teddy. Eight simple steps.
Hold on, I'll write them down, said Jack.
He pulled out his notebook and pencil from the field pack. As Teddy gave the directions again, Jack wrote, 1. Legs together. 2. Face earth. 3. Arch back. 4. Spread arms. 5. Count to 5. 6. Pull ripcord. 7. Elbows in. 8. Roll to the left. Annie and Jack stared at the notebook, whispering the steps to themselves.
Got it, said Annie.
After you land, said Teddy, roll up your chutes and hide them. Hide your helmets and goggles, too, and destroy your notes.
Got it, said Annie.
All right, said Teddy. Gas, oil. Jack peered around Teddy at the instrument panel. There were at least a dozen round gauges. Some monitored oil pressure, fuel pressure, and temperature. There were also compasses, brake controls, knobs, buttons, switches, and levers.
Oh, man, thought Jack.
You must have had a lot of training, he said to Teddy.
Indeed.
A full week, said Teddy.
A week? That's all?
Said Jack.
Yes, it was very intense, said Teddy as he started flipping switches.
They said I was a natural. Green lights lit up the panel. Needles swung right and left. Air intake control, Teddy announced. He turned a knob. It is much easier than learning magic. Jack felt a wave of panic.
Teddy, slow down, he said.
Engine starter button, Teddy shouted, pushing a button.
Teddy, are you sure you know how to do this? Jack said.
But his voice was drowned out by the sound of the engine as the propeller started to spin. The big wheels began rolling. The plane shook as it bumped over the grass. Then rocking from side to side, the spy taxi lifted into the air. As the tiny cramped plane climbed higher into the moonlit night, Teddy pushed more buttons and pulled more levers and shouted out more information. His heart racing, Jack tried to focus on the 8 steps. He whispered, legs together, face earth, arch back, spread arms, count to 5, pull ripcord, elbows in, roll to the left.
What does that mean?
Jack shook Annie's arm.
What does number 8 mean?
He shouted.
What?
She yelled back.
Number 8,
shouted Jack, jabbing his finger at the list.
Do you roll in the air or roll on the ground?
I think on the ground, Annie answered. Jack nodded.
That made sense.
As the plane rumbled through the night, Jack whispered the instructions to himself again and again.
We are crossing the English Channel, Teddy called. Normandy soon and your dropping point. Get ready.
Jack crammed his notebook and pencil back into his field pack. His fingers were trembling so much he had trouble buckling it.
We are over France now, shouted Teddy.
Oh no, murmured Jack.
We are coming to the drop zone, cried Teddy. Get ready to jump.
Jack froze with fear.
Open the door, yelled Teddy.
Jack couldn't move. Annie pulled up the latch, slid open the door, and crouched at the edge of the plane. With the door open, the roar of the engine and propellers was deafening. Jack looked down at the endless dark.
No way I can jump, he thought. Not without magic help.
Jack bolted upright.
Oh no, we forgot to get the wand.
Teddy, we need...
Jack shouted. Teddy couldn't hear him.
Jump, he yelled.
Wait, magic for Kathleen, cried Jack.
It was too late. Annie leaned out of the plane. She fell forward, arching her back and spreading out her arms.
Teddy, the magic, cried Jack.
Jump, Jack, Teddy yelled.
Jack had no choice. He had to jump now, or he'd land far away from Annie, and they'd never find each other. Jack closed his eyes and hurled himself out of the plane, down into the moonlit, windless night. Chapter 4. Behind Enemy Lines. Falling through the air, Jack forgot everything he'd written down. He forgot legs together, face earth, arch back, spread arms, count to five. But miraculously, he remembered pull ripcord. Jack fumbled for the cord on his chest strap. He grabbed the metal ring and pulled hard. The parachute popped out from Jack's harness. As the chute's white canopy opened above Jack, it yanked him backward. The billowing silk slowed his downward plunge. Jack clutched his field pack as he drifted through the night air. The drone of the spy taxi engine faded into the distance. Teddy was gone. Not far away, Jack could see Annie in the moonlight, floating to Earth, too.
Hi, she yelled to Jack.
Jack was too amazed to answer. He was filled with a strange happiness as they both drifted in a dreamlike fall toward the field below. Suddenly, the earth rose up to meet him. Jack hit the ground with a thud and, remembering the eighth step, rolled onto his left side. He lay in the cold, damp grass, trying to catch his breath.
We're in France! We did it!
Annie called from nearby. She threw off her parachute harness and ran to Jack.
We did it, he repeated, sitting up.
His parachute lay spread on the ground behind him.
We did it. Wasn't it fun? Said Annie.
Yeah, it was, said Jack in a daze.
Jack wiggled out of his harness. Floating through the night sky, actually had been fun, although he had no idea how he'd done what he'd just done.
I have some bad news, though.
What?
Asked Annie.
Teddy forgot to give us the magic wand for Kathleen, said Jack.
Oh, no, moaned Annie.
Oh, no is right, said Jack.
I guess it means we'll have to help Kathleen without magic, said Annie. But that's okay. We have lots of skills.
Like what? Jack asked.
Well, like, just a lot of skills, said Annie.
Don't worry, we can do this. Let's go.
Hold on, we have to roll up our chutes and figure out where we are first, said Jack. He and Annie looked around. In the moonlight, they could see trees bordering the field on three sides and a road on the fourth side. A church with a tall white steeple was down the road.
Let's take that road, said Annie.
Yep, said Jack. That should work. But we have to hide the parachutes before we go.
In the quiet night, Jack stood up and strapped his field pack on his back. He and Annie carefully rolled up the soft silk canopies of their parachutes. They gathered the straps and tangled cords in their arms and started across the field.
"Hey," said Annie, stopping. "I hear a plane."
"Teddy's back," said Jack.
He remembered that he forgot to give us the magic wand and spell.
"Yay," said Annie.
"Wait," said Jack, squinting at the sky. Not just one plane, but three planes droned overhead.
"It's not Teddy," said Annie.
"Run," said Jack. As the planes dipped down over the field, Jack and Annie ran toward the road, lugging the bundles of their parachutes.
"Get down," Jack shouted.
He pushed Annie into a ditch at the edge of the road. Clutching their gear, they lay in a thick bed of wet and rotting leaves. The planes roared off into the distance. After a long silence, Jack and Annie stood up.
"They're gone," Jack said.
"So what do we do now?" Annie asked.
"We have to find that town," said Jack. He looked around at the moonlit dark. "But we might have to wait for daylight to figure out how to get there."
Jack saw the glare of car headlights coming up the road.
"Hide!" cried Annie.
They threw themselves face down again in the ditch. Jack held his breath as the car rumbled by. Soon all was quiet again, except for the distant barking of dogs. Jack and Annie lifted their heads.
"We have to get away from this road," said Jack, "and find a place where we can stay hidden for a while. Remember, we're behind enemy lines. Nazis could be anywhere. Come on."
Annie didn't say anything. She didn't move.
"Hey, are you okay?" Jack asked her.
"No, I'm scared," Annie said in a whisper.
"You are?" said Jack.
He knelt beside her. Annie was never scared. He was always the scared one.
"This seems so dangerous," she said. "Hiding from Nazis."
Jack was frightened too. She was right. Hiding from Nazis seemed much scarier than anything they'd done before. But if Annie was scared, he had to act brave.
"It's okay," he said. "Think about what you told me earlier. We don't have magic, but we've got skills, and we've used our skills again and again on our missions, right?"
"Right,"
said Annie.
"Well, we'll use them this time," said Jack.
"You think we can?" asked Annie.
"I know we can," said Jack.
"First, we need to get to a safe spot." He pulled out his flashlight and pointed it toward the road. The light lit up a sign that said, "Bieville." Not far down the road was the White Church.
"Okay, Bieville.
This is where Teddy will pick us up with Kathleen."
"Right," said Annie.
"The field near the sign that says Bieville, near the White Church."
"See, we solved that with our observation skill," said Jack.
"So now we'll head into the woods across the road and hide there until daylight."
"Okay?"
"That's the skill of, being smart," said Annie.
She stood up. "Let's bury our stuff here."
"Good idea. I'd forgotten that," said Jack.
"See, skills. We got 'em."
They buried their parachute gear under piles of leaves and brush.
"Don't forget these," said Jack.
He pulled off his helmet and goggles and shoved them under the heap. Annie did the same.
"And my notes."
Jack ripped his notes out of his notebook, tore them up, and hid the pieces with everything else.
"Okay," he said. "Onward, let's go."
With Annie close behind, Jack led the way across the road and into the woods. Tramping through tangled undergrowth, Jack and Annie made their way deeper into the moonlit forest. They didn't stop until they came to a wooden fence. When Jack pointed their flashlight toward the area beyond the fence, it shone on neat rows of vine-covered trellises.
"Looks like a vineyard," he said.
"What's that?" asked Annie.
You know, where they grow grapes to make wine, said Jack.
We shouldn't trespass.
Before he could finish, Annie grabbed his arm.
Listen.
Jack listened. From the woods behind them came the sound of a dog barking. Then he heard men's voices.
They're searching for us, said Annie.
Trespass, said Jack.
He turned off his flashlight, and they scrambled over the wooden fence and took off running through the moonlit vineyard. They ran between long rows of grapevines until they saw a small farmhouse ahead. Smoke was rising from the chimney. Not far from the house was a barn. The barking behind them was getting louder. It sounded as if the searchers had entered the vineyard and were heading their way.
There, said Jack.
He grabbed Annie's hand and pulled her toward the barn. Jack yanked open a wooden door, and the two of them ran inside. Jack switched his flashlight back on and shined it around the barn. Horses stood in stalls, swishing their tails and munching hay.
There!
Annie pointed to a stack of hay bales in the back. They crouched together behind the bales. Jack turned off the flashlight and put it in his field pack. He and Annie waited motionless, huddled on the floor, inhaling hay dust and animal smells, and trying to breathe as quietly as they could. The barking grew louder and closer. The horses moved restlessly. Jack heard men shouting above the barking, but he couldn't understand what they were saying. Then the door to the barn banged open.
Fritz, check inside, a man said.
Jack heard two sharp barks and the sound of a dog sniffing and scratching. The next thing he knew, a German shepherd bounded over to the hay bales. With a low growl, it bared its teeth.
It's okay, Annie whispered to the dog. It's okay.
The dog snorted and sniffed their faces. Jack didn't move a muscle as Annie gently stroked the dog's head and whispered in its ear. The dog grew calm. Annie whispered again. The shepherd licked her face. Then it barked once and loped out of the barn.
Nothing in there, Fritz, the man said to the dog. Good boy.
Then the door slammed shut. The men's voices faded away. Everything grew quiet. Jack and Annie waited a long moment. Then Jack let out his breath.
What did you say to that police dog? He asked.
Annie shrugged.
I said, good dog, everything's okay, we're friends. I just didn't tell him whose friends we were.
Jack shook his head in amazement.
Let's escape while we can, said Annie.
Jack was relieved. Annie sounded like her old self again. Calming the dog calmed her too, he thought.
Okay, but let's go slowly.
Just as Jack and Annie stood up, the door to the barn creaked open again. Jack's heart pounded as they dropped back behind the hay bales. The barn was lit with flickering lantern light. Jack heard footsteps on the wooden floor. The steps grew closer and closer. Then a man with a black beard peered over the hay bales. He wore a black beret slanted over one eye.
Aha! We found you,
he said in a deep, growly whisper. Chapter 5 Resistance. Jack was too terrified to speak. Annie slowly held up two fingers in a V is for victory sign.
What is she doing? Jack thought wildly. We don't know who this guy is.
The man glared at Annie for a moment. Then his craggy face broke into a smile, and he held up his fingers in a matching V.
Oh, man, thought Jack. Did we really just find a member of the French Resistance?
Who are they, Gaston?
A woman called from the barn doorway.
Who are you?
Gaston asked in a raspy voice. Jack stuttered, terrified.
Jean and Aimé,
Annie said quickly. Annie's a good spy, Jack thought. He'd completely forgotten their French names.
Really? Said the man. Are those your real names?
Annie laughed.
No, our real names are Jack and Annie.
Oh, brother, Jack thought. She's a terrible spy.
And what are Jack and Annie doing in our barn?
Asked Gaston.
We're hiding from the Nazis,
Annie said.
Well then, said Gaston, you are in the right place.
For the moment you are safe, children, said the woman stepping forward. She wore a shawl around her shoulders and a kerchief over her dark hair. Hello, my dears. My name is Suzette, and this is my husband, Gaston.
Nice to meet you, said Annie.
Come with us back to our house, said Suzette.
Jack and Annie climbed out from behind the hay bales and followed the French couple to the door of the barn. Before they left, Gaston blew out his lantern light.
Silence, he ordered, until we get into the house.
Gaston and Suzette led Jack and Annie through the dark to the front door of the small stone farmhouse. Once they were inside, Jack and Annie looked around the room. It had a low ceiling. Candles burned on a heavy wooden table. A fire flickered in a large fireplace. Suzette placed an iron bar over the front door while Gaston closed the window shutters.
Sit, children, said Suzette. We will have apple cider, and you will share our dinner.
Jack and Annie sat at the table near the hearth. A pot hung over the fire. Jack relaxed a little as he smelled roasting potatoes, onions, and carrots. Gaston poured cider into mugs, and Suzette prepared four bowls of stew. Then the couple joined Jack and Annie at the table. The fire crackled as they all quietly sipped cider and ate their dinner. When they were finished, Gaston leaned back in his chair and lit a pipe.
You know, he said, when the Nazis were here earlier, they were not looking for you.
They weren't? Said Annie.
No, they were looking for two paratroopers who'd been spotted dropping into a field near here, said Gaston.
Oh, then they were looking for us, said Jack.
No.
Gaston stopped and gave Jack a funny look.
Unless you too could be those paratroopers.
Yes, we could be, said Annie.
But no, said Gaston. How could two children parachute into Normandy? And why?
We're working with agents of the SOE, said Annie.
But no, Gaston said again.
Oh my, said Suzette. Are things so bad that children are being recruited as spies now?
Well, not just any children, said Annie. We were asked because one of our best friends is an SOE agent. We have information that she is 3 miles east of Caen. We're supposed to find her and get her out of France.
Then you do not have far to go, said Gaston. We are only 4 miles northwest of Caen.
There is great danger, though, said Suzette. The city is surrounded by Nazi patrols. You will need the right papers.
We have identity cards, said Annie.
Good, said Gaston, standing up. Come with me. We will hide you here tonight and help you get on your way in the morning.
Thank you, said Jack, standing up with Annie.
Thanks for the dinner, Annie said to Suzette.
It is my pleasure to feed two brave children again, Suzette said.
Why did she say again?
Jack wondered.
Come along,
Gaston said, waving his arm. Jack and Annie followed him to a room off the kitchen. Gaston pulled aside a floor rug, revealing a trap door. He lifted the door and then, carrying a lantern, he led Jack and Annie down a staircase to a cellar. Hundreds of wine bottles sat in racks along the walls of the dank, musty room.
Suzette will bring bedding, said Gaston, and you can keep the light with you.
He placed the lantern on a long table and then started back up the steps. Without looking back, he raised his hand.
"Good night," he said.
"Thank you,"
called Jack and Annie. When Gaston was gone, Annie sat down at the table.
"Wow, they saved us," she said.
"For now," said Jack.
"I wonder what these little rubber blocks are for," said Annie.
She picked up a small block from the table and held it to the lantern light.
"Look, it has the letter H on it."
Jack walked over to her. On the table were dozens of small rubber blocks and several stacks of paper.
"And this one has the letter S," said Annie, holding up another block.
"Here's a D," said Jack. "S and U. They're all letters. It must be a printing set."
"Check this out," said Annie.
She picked up a piece of paper from one of the stacks on the table. She showed it to Jack. He read the print on the page aloud.
"Hope and courage. Freedom soon."
Annie thumbed through more papers in the stack.
"They all say the same thing," she said. "It's a bunch of flyers. Do you think Gaston and Suzette secretly passed them out?"
"Here's your bedding, children," said Suzette, coming down the steps to the cellar.
When she saw Annie holding one of the flyers, she stopped.
"Did you and Gaston print these?" Annie asked.
Suzette crossed the room and stood in the lantern light.
"No, we didn't," she said softly. "Our sons did."
"Your sons?" asked Annie.
"Our brave twins, Tom and Theo," said Suzette. "They are couriers for the French Resistance."
"What are couriers?" asked Jack.
"Couriers travel on bicycles, delivering messages from one resistance group to another," said Suzette. "Tom and Theo also printed flyers to give people hope. On their courier routes, they sometimes posted them when no one was looking. Only one day someone was looking."
"What happened?" asked Annie.
3 months ago, we received word that Tom and Theo were picked up in Paris by the Nazis," said Suzette.
"So they're in prison now?" asked Annie.
Suzette took a deep breath.
"We do not know what has happened to them," she said.
"I'm sorry," said Annie. "Are Tom and Theo children?"
"They are young men, 22 years old," said Suzette. "But they will always be our children."
"Are you and Gaston in the French Resistance too?" asked Jack.
Suzette nodded.
"Our job is to gather and send information." She turned away from them. "But now, my job is to make your beds."
"We'll help," said Annie.
She and Jack helped Suzette spread the threadbare blankets on the floor.
"I fear you will not be so comfortable," said Suzette, "but at least you will be safe."
"That's all that matters," said Jack.
"Thank you, Suzette," said Annie, and she hugged the kind French woman.
"Try to sleep now, children," said Suzette.
"You will need all your strength tomorrow to find your friend."
Then she climbed the stairs and closed the door to the cellar.
"That's so sad about their boys," said Annie.
"Yeah," said Jack.
He didn't know what else to say. He was amazed by the courage of Gaston and Suzette. Even after their sons were caught, the couple was willing to risk their lives to help others.
"So tomorrow we head to Caen," said Annie.
Jack nodded.
"Do you have Kathleen's message?"
Annie pulled a piece of paper from her pocket and read aloud.
"Come to me in the darkest time. A wand I need and a magic rhyme. 3 miles east of Sir Kay's grave. Cross a river to find a cave. Look for knights and small round cows. A crack in a rock beneath the boughs."
"So we figured out the first 4 lines, said Annie. "We know Kathleen needs magic, which Teddy forgot to give us."
"Right," said Jack.
"And we know we have to go 3 miles east of a town named Caen,"
and then cross a river to find a cave.
Right, said Annie. And then the weird part.
She reread.
Look for knights and small round cows, a crack in a rock, beneath the boughs.
Jack shook his head. His brain was getting foggy.
Let's ask Gaston and Suzette in the morning if they have any ideas, he said.
Good plan, said Annie. They pulled off their boots and lay down on the ragged blankets.
We'll figure it all out tomorrow,
Annie murmured.
Yeah, right now I'm way too tired, said Jack, closing his eyes.
He was exhausted from traveling through time to Glastonbury, flying over the English Channel, parachuting into Normandy, running from planes, lying in a ditch, hiding in a barn, escaping Nazis, and making friends with people in the French Resistance, all between twilight and bedtime.
Chapter 6. The Hour of Battle.
Jack, Annie, wake up, said Suzette.
She stood at the bottom of the cellar stairs.
It is morning. There is news.
Jack opened his eyes. Where were they? He squinted at the racks of wine bottles against the wall and the table with the flyers and the printing set. Then he remembered a cellar in Normandy, France. He sat up.
What news? Annie asked.
We just received a message from the London BBC, said Suzette. It was the message we have been waiting for. The hour of the great battle is coming, tomorrow, June 6th.
What battle? Asked Jack.
The invasion of France, said Suzette. The invasion by the Allies, the English, Scots, Americans, Canadians, and others will all invade France and drive out the Nazis, starting tomorrow.
Really? Said Jack.
Yes, said Suzette. Excuse me. I must get back to Gaston. He is getting more news from the BBC over the wireless. She hurried up the steps.
Oh, wow, said Annie. Did you hear what she said?
Yes, the Allies, said Jack.
No, the wireless, interrupted Annie. They have a wireless. Once we find Kathleen, we can come back here and send Teddy a message.
You're right, said Jack. But now let's go find out more about that invasion. Jack and Annie dashed up the stairs, taking two steps at a time. Gaston was at the kitchen table. Smoking his pipe, he was hunched over a small open suitcase. Inside was a radio with tubes and knobs. Gaston wore a headset and was listening carefully.
Plan purple, he shouted.
Plan purple,
Suzette repeated.
Plan purple? What's that? Jack said.
It means all the resistance must act now, she said. They must destroy communication lines to keep the Nazis in the south from finding out about the invasion. Gaston took off his headset and pointed his pipe at Suzette.
Plan green, and now plan purple.
What's plan green? Said Jack.
We received word of plan green a few days ago, said Suzette. It called upon resistance fighters to blow up bridges and train tracks to keep enemy troops from traveling here.
Why would they travel here? Asked Annie.
This is where the Allied invasion will take place, said Gaston. Here in Normandy. The Allies will come by air and sea. Tomorrow they will land on beaches not far from Caen, and then fight their way across France.
Oh, man. I get it now, Jack murmured.
D-Day. Tomorrow is D-Day.
Listen to me, children, said Gaston.
He pointed his pipe at them.
You must tell no one what we have just told you.
We won't. We promise, said Annie, shaking her head.
And you must leave France at once, Gaston said. Now.
Leave now? Said Jack.
Yes. Return to England immediately, said Gaston. There will be terrible fighting here tomorrow. Many bombs will drop.
But we have to find our friend, Kathleen, said Annie.
Ah, you cannot worry about your friend now,
Gaston said. You must worry about yourselves.
It is quite possible, children, that your friend has already gone south, Suzette said. Perhaps she has crossed the Pyrenees Mountains into Spain. Many people have escaped that way and found safety.
We have to at least try to find Kathleen before we can leave, said Annie. That's our mission.
Then you have only today to find her, said Gaston. You must leave France by nightfall.
We'd better get going then, Annie said.
Wait, said Jack.
He turned to Gaston.
We have a favor to ask. Can you send a message by wireless to our contact in the SOE and let him know that we must be picked up tonight?
Yes, I can do that, said Gaston.
And I will prepare food for you, said Suzette.
And I'll get our stuff, said Annie.
Suzette and Annie left the kitchen. Gaston grabbed a piece of paper and a pencil.
What should the message say? He asked Jack.
The unicorn is free. Nightfall, June 5th, said Jack.
The unicorn is free. Nightfall, June 5th.
Gaston repeated as he wrote down the message.
I like that, he said, nodding. The unicorn is free. It sounds very hopeful. It sounds like a message I would like to get about my sons someday.
I'm sorry they disappeared, Jack said.
Yes, whispered Gaston. As am I.
He shook his head.
Well, his voice boomed. It's wartime, and war is terrible for everyone, is it not?
Yes, it is, said Jack.
Got everything, said Annie, returning to the kitchen.
She was carrying their boots and Jack's field pack.
And here is a bit of food, said Suzette. She gave Annie a small sack.
Thanks, said Annie.
She put the sack of food in Jack's pack. Then she and Jack pulled on their boots.
It is 8:30 now, said Gaston, looking at his watch. It will be dark by 8:00 tonight. So you have nearly 12 hours to find your friend.
Oh, we almost forgot to ask you, said Annie.
She pulled out Kathleen's rhyme.
This is the message she sent about where to look for her.
She read aloud the third and fourth lines of the rhyme.
3 miles east of Sir Kay's grave, cross a river to find a cave.
So we know we go to Caen first, said Jack, since that's where Sir Kay is buried. And then we'll head 3 miles east from there and cross a river.
The River Orne, said Suzette.
Great, said Jack. And then we look for a cave.
Yes, but there are many caves east of the River Orne in Monville, said Gaston.
Long ago they mined limestone rock in that area, creating caverns and tunnels.
I wonder how we find the right one, Jack said.
I do not know, said Gaston, frowning.
Here are the next lines, said Annie.
She showed Gaston the message and read aloud.
Look for knights and small round cows, a crack in a rock beneath the boughs.
Knights? Growled Gaston.
What does your friend mean? Knights in armor? Knights from the Middle Ages?
Annie shrugged.
Small round cows? Said Suzette.
She shook her head. That doesn't make sense to me.
Nor to me, said Gaston.
It's okay. We'll figure out that part later, said Annie. You've been a big help just telling us about the River Orne and the caves in Monville.
She put the note back in her pocket.
Let's go, said Jack.
He took his field pack from Annie and pulled it on.
Come along then, said Gaston.
He led them out of the farmhouse into the chilly morning. The windy air smelled of wood smoke. The sky was overcast.
Do you have money? Said Suzette.
Actually, no,
said Jack.
Gaston? Said Suzette.
Gaston reached into the pocket of his trousers and brought out a handful of coins.
French francs for you, he said, handing them to Jack.
Thank you.
Jack dropped the francs into his pocket.
Gaston, they will need bicycles too, said Suzette.
Yes, yes, come along, said Gaston.
They all followed him to the barn. Gaston stepped inside and came out a moment later carrying two bikes.
You can ride these. They belonged to our boys when they were younger.
Just follow any road to the south, said Suzette, and you will come to Caen.
Keep to the back roads, said Gaston. There are fewer motor cars on them.
Which way is south? Asked Annie.
Wait, I will give you something to guide you. Suzette slipped back into the house and returned a moment later.
Take this compass. It belonged to Tom and Theo.
She handed a small silver compass to Annie. Then she gave Jack and Annie each a flat black cap.
These berets belong to them too.
Thank you, said Annie.
When they put on the berets, Jack adjusted his to look like Gaston's. Suzette smiled.
Good. Now you look French.
If you come to a checkpoint, said Gaston, act very calm when you pass the sentries. If they stop you and ask for papers, show them your identity cards. Do not give the V sign to anyone unless you are certain that person is on our side.
Many of our citizens do not belong to the resistance, Suzette explained.
In these times, you never know who your friends and enemies are, growled Gaston. And that is why you must tell no one about the invasion tomorrow.
We won't, we promise, said Annie.
But I'll tell you guys something, said Jack.
What is that?
Said Gaston. Jack took a deep breath and then said,
The invasion will be a success. Tom and Theo wrote the truth. France will gain back its freedom.
Gaston gave him a crooked smile.
Jack's right, said Annie. It might take time, but we know you'll be free. We know it for a fact.
Sudden tears filled Gaston's eyes. He nodded briskly and then turned his face away.
Thank you for your kind words, children, said Suzette, putting an arm around Gaston.
Ride south on the lane, running past the farm. Gaston will send your message over the wireless. I hope your SOE contact receives it, and I hope you find your dear friend and take her back to England with you.
Thanks, said Jack. Thanks for everything.
Jack and Annie climbed onto the bikes. They rode down the bumpy dirt path, away from the farmhouse. When they came to the lane, Annie pulled out the compass.
South, that way, she said, pointing to the right.
Before they turned onto the lane, Jack and Annie looked back. The French couple was still watching them. Gaston held up two fingers in a V is for victory sign. Jack and Annie each flashed the sign back at him. Then they turned onto the lane and headed south. Chapter 7. Friends and Enemies. Jack and Annie rode with the wind at their backs. The spring air smelled of plowed soil and freshly cut hay. As their bicycles wobbled down the dirt lane, they passed apple orchards, wheat fields, vineyards, and farmhouses.
I can't believe it, Jack called to Annie. The Allied invasion of Normandy. That was called D-Day. D-Day. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, but I don't know exactly what it was, said Annie.
I read a book about it, said Jack.
It was one of the most important military events of all time. Over 100,000 soldiers landed in Normandy, France, to fight Hitler's army. It was the beginning of the end of World War II. I can't believe we came here on the day before D-Day.
I hope everything doesn't get destroyed by bombs,
said Annie.
It's beautiful here.
Yeah, it is, said Jack. The countryside looked like an old painting, peach-colored farmhouses, apple trees with white flowers, red poppies blooming in fields. Everything was so peaceful and lovely that Jack could hardly believe the Battle of D-Day would start here tomorrow. It gave him a strange feeling to know what was coming. After bumping over ruts and ridges, Jack and Annie came to the end of the dirt lane. Annie checked the compass. Left, she said. They turned left and pedaled down the wide road bordered by hedgerows. The hedges were so tall, it was impossible to see beyond them.
Are we on a back road?
Annie asked.
I can't tell, Jack said.
They hadn't gone much farther when a motorcycle turned onto the road and headed their way.
Friend? Enemy? Jack wondered anxiously.
In case it was an enemy, he called out to Annie,
Act normal.
Right, said Annie. They both smiled broadly and steered their bikes single file along the edge of the road. Jack was glad that Suzette had said wearing berets made them look French. When the motorcycle roared past, the driver didn't even look their way. The motorcycle disappeared in the distance, but then another car turned onto the road. As it headed toward them, Jack tried to look normal again. Just as the car sped past, he glanced in its direction. To his amazement, a woman driver flashed a quick V is for victory sign. Jack grinned and gave the sign back.
Friend, he called to Annie.
The woman's V signal made him feel hopeful. Maybe this isn't going to be so hard, he thought. Coming toward them next was a horse and cart driven by a young man who looked like a farmer. Seated beside him was a teenage girl. When they saw Jack and Annie, they smiled and nodded. Definitely friends, Jack thought. When he got close to the couple, he flashed the V is for victory sign at them too. An angry look crossed the man's face. He cried out in alarm. He pulled his horse to a halt and pointed at Jack and Annie.
Couriers! Resistance! He shouted.
Oh no, thought Jack. Gaston was right. In these times, you really didn't know who was a friend and who was an enemy.
Behind the horse and cart, another motorcycle was rumbling down the road. The rider wore a gray uniform. The people in the cart flagged him down.
Go! Jack cried.
He and Annie wheeled around and raced their bikes against the wind. When Jack looked back, the motorcycle was coming toward them, fast.
Ditch the bikes! Annie shouted.
They skidded to a stop, dropped their bikes to the ground, and bolted through an opening in a hedgerow. Scraped by branches and thorns, they pushed their way through the narrow gap until they burst onto farmland. As they ran through a cow pasture, Jack looked around wildly for a place to hide.
Barn! He cried, pointing.
He and Annie ran toward a red wooden building next to a silo. When they drew closer to the entrance, they saw a man in white clothes putting two large milk cans into the back of a white truck.
Help!
Cried Annie. The milkman looked startled, but as the motorcycle crashed through the hedge at the edge of the property, he seemed to understand everything at once.
Quick, in the truck! He shouted.
Jack and Annie scrambled into the back of the truck and found a hiding place behind rows of tall milk canisters. Crouching behind the canisters, they covered their mouths so no one would hear them gasping for breath. The milkman slammed the back door of the truck shut. There was a panel between the front seat and the windowless back area. Jack and Annie sat in the dark and listened to the motorcycle thunder closer and then stop. Through the closed door, they could hear bits of conversation from outside.
Yes. Two. Boy and girl. Resistance couriers. Yes. You are sure? Yes. Good. Thank you for your help.
Moments later, Jack heard the motorcycle rev up and drive away. The milkman started his engine. Then, with the large canisters jiggling in their crates, the truck began bouncing over the road.
"I guess we're going with him," whispered Annie.
"I wonder if he's a friend or enemy," whispered Jack.
"A friend," said Annie. "He must have told the motorcycle guy we went in the opposite direction."
"Or he could be taking us to the police," whispered Jack.
"Maybe the motorcycle guy was thanking him for locking us in his truck and taking us to the Nazis."
"Oh no, I hadn't thought of that," Annie whispered.
Clutching their berets, they jiggled with the clattering milk cans as the truck continued on. After a while, the milk truck stopped again. It sounded like the driver was getting out. Jack froze. He heard the back door handle click. Then the door swung open. The milkman pulled out a large milk canister and whispered,
"All clear. Hurry."
"Thanks," said Annie.
Leaving the door open, the milkman carried the canister away from the truck.
"Go," said Jack.
He and Annie jumped out of the back of the truck. It was parked in front of a long building with a sign that said, "Kong Milk Processing Plant."
"Look, we're in Kong," said Annie, pointing to the sign. "Isn't that great?"
"Go, go," said Jack.
He and Annie raced across a street and headed down a narrow alley.
"Wait," Jack said, stopping in his tracks. "We shouldn't run. It will make us look suspicious."
They stopped for a moment and tried to catch their breath.
"The milkman was a friend," said Annie.
"Definitely," said Jack.
"Okay, let's go. Act normal."
Jack and Annie stepped out from the alley and into a busy town square. In the middle of the square was an outdoor market. Women with children strolled from booth to booth, buying lettuce, peas, potatoes, flowers, linens, and lace. Surrounding the square were cobblestone streets, lined with quaint buildings. There was a church covered with ivy, a small train depot, and a sidewalk cafe with a red-striped awning. Again, Jack found it difficult to believe that a great battle was about to take place.
"This is all going to change tomorrow," he said to Annie as they strolled through the market.
"I know," Annie said. "I wish we could tell everyone to leave today."
"Yep," said Jack. He looked at a clock tower in the square.
"It's almost 10. We have 10 hours left until nightfall."
"Well, we're in Kong," said Annie. "Now we have to go 3 miles east to the River Orne and the caves of Monville."
"Right," said Jack.
"Excuse me," Annie called to a young woman pushing a baby buggy. "Can you please tell us how to get to Monville?"
"It is very easy," said the woman. "Just a short train ride. You get off at the first stop." She pointed to the depot next to the cafe.
"Thanks," said Annie.
"You're welcome," said the woman. She waved two fingers and kept pushing the carriage across the square.
"Friend," Annie said to Jack.
"How do you know?" he asked.
"She gave me a V is for victory sign," said Annie.
"Or maybe she just happened to use two fingers to wave to you," said Jack. "Even though the milkman was a friend, we can never be sure who our friends and enemies are. Remember the farmer and the girl in the cart?"
"Yeah, I didn't see that coming," said Annie.
"Not in a million years," said Jack.
"I thought," said Annie.
The roar of engines interrupted her. 4 open black cars rolled into the square and parked in a line. Each car had a red, white, and black symbol on the side. Jack recognized it as a swastika, the symbol of the Nazis. Soldiers got out of the cars and stood at the edge of the square, watching the shoppers. They wore gray uniforms with black belts and tall boots.
"Enemies," Jack said under his breath.
"Definitely," said Annie.